In this edition of Hoosology, Matt and Justin welcome back author Scott Howard Cooper. Scott wrote a new book, Kingdom on Fire, Kareem, Wooden, Walton, in the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty, which is available now. Scott discusses what basketball fans can expect by reading the book, the relationship between Bill Walton and John Wooden, what makes Walton a unique basketball personality, and the impact of Kareem Abdul-Jabbar on society and basketball at large. This was a great chat, especially for those who might have heard about the UCLA dynasty but want to learn a lot more. This is a great chat. You definitely don't want to miss it. Scott's always a great, great guest. Hoopsology is presented by Ball's Life. And now, Scott Howard Cooper. We first had this guest back on Hoopsology in 2021 to discuss his book, Steve Curry Life. And now he's back to discuss his latest book, Kingdom on Fire, Kareem, Wooden, Walton, and the Turbulent Days of the UCLA Basketball Dynasty. It's going to be out now as of the recording of this podcast. We welcome Scott Howard Cooper onto Hoopsology. Welcome, Scott.
Thank you. It's great to be with you guys again.
Thanks for coming on to the show. Really appreciate it. Always enjoy talking to you. And when just doing my search, I just love talking to authors and seeing what basketball books are going to be slated to be released in 2024. I think this book immediately caught my eye. Just in terms of, I think fans of this day and age need to know about just the history of the game. And I think the timing of this book is appropriate just in terms of what our country is going through, in terms of just the different social issues, as well as the issues within college sports. So for just readers that might see this book on Amazon and want to pick it up, what can they expect? You can give us a synopsis of what this book covers.
They can expect a lot of personalities, big personalities, events, moments. It's a basketball book, but there's not a lot of play-by-play in there. It's not an X's and O's, here's how they won the championship game in 1972. It's not that kind of thing. It is a team and its time that these UCLA Bruins won 10 championships in 12 years. I focus on the seven in a row. The bookends are basically the arrival of Lou Alcindor through the departure of Bill Walton. And there's seven championships in a row as America is coming apart at the seams. That's the whole thing. It's not just about UCLA. It's UCLA set against the backdrop of the times. That as impressive as it was in the moment as they're winning seven in a row, to look back now with a 2024 perspective and think Vietnam, Watergate, Kent State, Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy, all these things, and even the good stuff, Summer of Love, the music scene in Los Angeles and around the country, campus protests, all these things going on. It's even more remarkable now when you think about it to win seven in a row while John Wooden is having to hold these things together with tape and bubblegum.
Can you take us into just the coaching mindset of John Wooden? How did he keep that together in terms of, you know, having these big personalities and also just dealing with just all the turbulent different social issues was going on? Like, what was his coaching style like? Was he a more of a disciplinarian or was he, did he have more of an innovative coaching style of that time? Like, kind of what was his kind of environment like just for Lou Alcindor and Bill Walton during that time?
He was all about stability. Now, everybody who knows John Wooden in retirement as he became sort of America's grandfather in the 1990s and the early 2000s won't be surprised to hear that. He's a guy that would treat his players with respect. He tried to at all times. He obviously had his human moments where he was not perfect, but he was about stability. He was about consistency and repetition. He would run the same practice on February 15th, 1965, that he did on February 15th, 1969. That kind of thing. He had his practices written down on note cards, 3x5 index cards, and would go back as that next practice approach and say, what did I do last year, 2 years ago, 3 years ago on this date? And obviously things get thrown off by the game schedule because sometimes it's not possible to do exactly. But he believed in repetition. He did not do anything clever. He was not an X's and O's guy. He's the first person to say he was not great on strategy. Jerry Norman was one of his assistant coaches, and gets a lot of the credit, or should get a lot of the credit. He came up with a lot of the innovations. John Wooden always had terrific assistant coaches, and John tried to sort of be the CEO. He was the guy that would oversee the big picture.
Scott, I think one thing that was surprising, I mean, in the world of basketball, I think the common perception, I mean, you mentioned the grandfather image of Coach Wooden. I think there's a perception almost like he's sort of like a saint of basketball. I mean, that he could do no wrong. He had no flaws as a coach, which of course were all these people are human. Players are flawed. Coaches are flawed, et cetera. I'm curious as to the perception of Coach Wooden in the moment. I know that there are things in this book that I would encourage readers to check out where it's very tumultuous. There are big disagreements in how those practices are run and in things that the players are doing. Was that kept under wraps? Was that known in the public perception? How big was the scope of, I guess, knowledge into this team?
It was pretty big. Obviously, not everything was known, but there were several newspapers that followed them closely. There obviously was not anything like the internet or ESPN or something like that, but Sports Illustrated was around constantly. UCLA was a big draw on the road, as you might imagine. So anytime they would go to another city, there would always be some sort of feature story on "Here Come the Bruins." People, I think, would be surprised at John Wooden as a disciplinarian, because I used the phrase "America's grandfather" a few minutes ago, and that's how people of the 21st century know of him. Even since his passing, people still love to pass around the YouTube videos of him giving speeches. He's obviously has some books out there. There's a statue of him outside of Pauley Pavilion. So he is still very much in the public eye, despite having been gone since June 2010. But he was a tough guy. He ran his guys hard. He was strict. He had his rules. I think he was proud of the fact that he adjusted those rules later on as he saw that society was changing. He tried to react to that and change himself. But it was pretty well known at the time that he was a yeller. And again, I don't know that anybody now would believe him. Just the fact that, as well as, I don't think that the players he had then would ever have imagined that he would turn into this kindly guy, because he was tough. He would drill these guys. I mentioned the repetition, and that was a great part of his success. His practices were nothing that had great insight, anything unique about it. He would just run the same passing drill a million times, and then he would run the same shooting drill a million times. One of the comments I make in the book is he didn't try to beat you on the court on game night. He always thought his team would win games because of what they did in practice, in the empty gym the day before, 2 days before, 3 days before. That was his gift, was blending talent through constant practice and organization, and putting high expectations on his group.
Yes, fascinating. We recently had a discussion with a basketball coach about the importance of like flow and kind of, I guess, in layman terms, putting it like just creating a good vibe in practice, like keeping things light so these players can stay in the flow state, especially when trying to repeat all these three-point jumpers and these repetitive motions and things these players are doing. I get the sense from what you said there. I mean, Coach Wooden did make an effort to adapt and change with those rules. Do you think he's someone who, I mean, the record speaks for itself, certainly at that time. Do you think he's someone who would have been the adapted type? I mean, you mentioned where he comes from, his origins being very strict, disciplined, very conservative, I think, for those times. Would he, you think, be able to evolve as a coach? You know, maybe it's hard to say, you know, 50 plus years later from his coaching prime, but is he that type of a coach?
Would he have been able to coach now, or do you mean how did he do evolve?
Correct. Yeah. Yeah. Like in a more modern era.
No. He would have quit long ago. Mm. He did not like recruiting. And obviously that's a huge part of it now. So much of the reason UCLA kept getting great players was because those players, in a sense, were throwing themselves at UCLA. John Wooden did not want to recruit Power Memorial senior John Wooden. Lou Alcindor. He did not want to recruit Lou Alcindor. He wasn't keen about recruiting Bill Walton. He did not like recruiting. He did not have to go on the road to recruit. He didn't like his assistants to have to go on the road to recruit. You should be home on the weekend with your family. That was the whole thing. He had to be pushed. In fact, probably even ordered by his athletic director, J.D. Morgan, to go to New York to visit and to try to get Lou Alcindor's commitment. No, he would not have done well. His head would have spun off his shoulders when you talk about the individualism that's in the game now. That was the exact opposite of what he preached.
Scott, I want to ask you about Bill Walton. He's probably one of the most fascinating figures within basketball. I'm entering my 40s, so unfortunately I wasn't able to see him play. So I've only known him as a television personality, and he has a very unique personality now doing college basketball for ESPN. So just your research for this book, can you kind of take us into, did he always have this personality when he was actually a player? Like, kind of, can you take us into kind of teenage Bill Walton? Was he kind of always like this? Or because I feel like he's just one of the most unique human beings on this planet. I can't really compare him to anybody else. He's just so unique and so different just when seeing him on television. This, when he was an actual player, and you mentioned this with Wooden, just his, you know, a very disciplinarian style, like how did those two kind of mold together to make a winning combination?
That's one of the interesting parts, is that Bill Walton and John Wooden would clash on things. Nothing major. The one that everybody always points to is the often told story about that Bill didn't want to get a haircut the day before practice started, and John said you have to, and John Wooden said you have to, and basically said, told him, you know, well, no, you're right, Bill, it's your choice. You don't have to if you don't want to. We're going to miss you not being on the team this year. And so Bill got on his bike and he pedaled down to Westwood Village and got his haircut on the spot. They disagreed on a lot of different things, but always in conversation. There was never a big blow up of any kind. It was just they were two people that had opposing views, but always learned to live with it. The difference being that once they got on the court, it was all about basketball. Bill was a rebel, stubborn, opinionated off the court. Once he stepped between the lines, he was the definition of an ideal player, an ideal teammate. He didn't want the spotlight. He always wanted the attention to go to other people. He loved the passing game. That's why he went to UCLA. He fell in love with the John Wooden style of fast break and moving the ball and keeping things moving, playing fun, fast break basketball. And Bill Walton on the court was a lot like Lou Alcindor, later Kareem Abdul-Jabbar, after his college time, that it was always team first. They were selfless. They cared about the winning, not the accolades. And that's why it worked. Because either of those two guys could have brought down their teams in their years if they made it about themselves. But that was the farthest thing from their minds. Bill is very different now compared to then in how he deals with the public. The guy you see or hear a lot on the broadcast is just filled with joy. And the reason I like it is because it's real. I've known Bill a long time, and that's how he is when he's not in front of a camera. He just has this joy of the game, joy of life. And back then, he was a good guy in the sense that he would look out for his teammates and he would say nice things. And he was a great communicator on the court John Wooden said he never had a player who talked more on the court than Bill Walton, which, of course, is key to anyone who knows basketball, defensively especially. He had this traffic cop playing under the basket, and that helped immeasurably. But he was a jerk. He was difficult to be around for a lot of other people. The media didn't like him. A lot of the fans found him surly when they tried to have some interaction with him. And when I talked to Bill for this book, he said, "I've changed in a lot of ways." And he really regrets. He regrets how he was in a lot of the times during his college career. And that's one of the things that makes him a great guy. Very special is that he's very introspective. And he looks back and he says, "Why was I like that? Everyone was just trying to be nice to me." We know now why he was difficult, why it was difficult for him. He was just so uncomfortable in social settings. He was very shy. He had a terrible speech impediment because he was tall. People were always gawking at him or pointing at him or things like that. But that was his lot in life. And he could be a great guy and he could be rude. And now he's just a great guy all the time.
Do you get the sense from the research that you did in the book? I mean, there's the civil rights movement going on. There's the Vietnam War, which, of course, Bill Walton, who you were just discussing, was very vocal against. Do you get the sense that the players themselves, you mentioned this common goal of winning that they had together and why this all worked in this dynasty. Do you get the sense that the players felt, as being college athletes, that they were being used, like they were being oppressed in a way like is often talked about in the modern era with college sports, even with the introduction of NIL and kind of where things have gone with that? How did the players feel, you know, between that 65 to 75 run at UCLA?
I don't think so. Maybe there may have been one or two that had that opinion, but by and large, I didn't get the sense that people talked about being oppressed, that people talked about being used. They talked about hating the expectations because pretty early on, winning lost its joy for a lot of these guys. They, at the start of every season, it was, so how many points are you going to win the national championship by? It's the first day of practice. They hated the assumptions. They hated the expectations. It took away a lot of the fun. They hated the demands. They hated that some of the things they would hear from the crowds when they went on the road. The burdens of some of these guys were unbelievable. Lou Alcindor was a sophomore. I believe he would have been 18 at the time, I think, 18 or 19. He needed a police bodyguard when the team went to Chicago because he got death threats, because he's so good and he's black. And he was not terribly outspoken at the time, not the Kareem Abdul-Jabbar social commentator that he would become, but he stood out. And he heard a lot of bad things from a lot of different crowds. So it was tough. They faced things that nobody else did. But no, I don't think oppressed was one of them.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, just to have you unpack this, if you will. You mentioned, it's just so absurd to think about in the modern era, Coach Wooden's thoughts on recruiting and like not wanting to do that at all. And you mentioned the players were just so desperate, it sounds like, to go to LA, like that was a prime destination to play college basketball. Why LA in particular? Just simply to be in California near Hollywood, or is it deeper than that?
It wasn't Los Angeles as much as it was the University of California at Los Angeles. It was the school. It was John.
Gotcha.
It was John Wooden. That was the primary point. LA had an appeal. LA had an appeal to some players from other parts of the country. Some of the guys came from far away. Obviously, Lou Alcindor, Kareem from New York, and Mike Warren from Indiana, Tommy Curtis from Florida, and you can go down the line, and there was a bunch. And then there were other guys who wanted to come but ended up not coming for different reasons. Quinn Buckner, John Shumate, some really good players. But also, a lot of their successful recruiting was of people already in Southern California, already in either the immediate area or within an hour or two drive. They wanted to play for John Wooden. He was the magnet. It wasn't so much the city. Again, obviously that had some appeal. Larry Farmer told me the story about when he came from Denver for his recruiting visit. One moment he's at what was then known as Grauman's Chinese Theater, the famous place in Hollywood with where the movie stars' footprints, and he's watching all these teens, early 20s, college student, female walking around in short shorts, mini skirts, different things like that. And he says, all right, you know, LA, this could be pretty good. And the next night he's going to see Ray Charles in concert in Anaheim and going to Disneyland. So you can't deny that the location was part of it. But it was about John Wooden that when football players would show up for their recruiting visits with the football team, they had a young assistant coach named Dick Vermeil, who told me the story that he would talk to the players before their recruiting weekend. And he would say, where do you guys want to go? What do you want to see? And they would say, football players, high school football players. Can I meet John Wooden? So he had a draw that obviously got sucked in a ton of basketball players, but also crossed. His reach was so big, he was helping them get football players as well, and probably for other sports.
When was that sort of magnet effect there for Coach Wood, and when was that in effect, would you say, based on the research you did, that he himself was his own draw? I mean, he's kind of playing hard to get with his recruits in a way with his strategy there. When was he a big enough magnet? Once the title started rolling in a few times?
Yeah, it was the titles, and TV was a huge part of it because, again, if you're Larry Farmer from Denver, if you're people from back east, Pete Turgovich from Indiana, if you're able to see these guys on TV and say, that's fun basketball. That was one of the great things about John Wooden. He wasn't just successful, but he was fun. His whole thing was, I want to play fast. He was very concerned after Kareem, Lew Alcindor, came to UCLA, that he would be able to incorporate a center and build around a center. Is this going to slow us down? Are we going to have to just throw the ball inside every single time? And it turned out the answer was obviously no. They kept playing fast. So it was not only successful basketball, it was very fun basketball. And once people got to see that and combine that with the championships, combine that with that LA atmosphere we talked about a few minutes ago, I think that's when the guys started throwing themselves at John Wooden rather than John Wooden having to pursue the players.
Scott, I want to ask you about Kareem, and he's another figure that just growing up, I would expect it for him to be more respected just within the basketball community, just for all he's accomplished, but he's always been kind of a polarizing figure. And to me, I never understood that because I always, it's very obvious. I think he stands for equality and just kind of equal rights and everything that he's done, but always there's been an era of just kind of this weirdness compared to other athletes of his era and then just other legends. Do you know why that's the case in terms of just him? I think he gets his respect. And I think for the first time, I think there was universal praise for him when LeBron broke his scoring record. But I just still, as him, just his college career, his pro career, just everything he encompasses to the game, I don't think he gets the respect that he deserves. And it's kind of just perplexing as to why that's the case.
As a player, or you mean personally?
Both. I just think, you know, to me, Michael Jordan's just held as such a high regard, and he should. But yet, I get with Kareem, I get this different era. But yet, I mean, you can't deny this guy's credentials just through just the history of the game. And yet, I don't think he has held in that regard among just in basketball circles. It's not just a younger fan thing. I think older fans as well. And even when I was younger, I just got this kind of weird sense when he was just covered in the media, and it's just, I've always wondered why that's the case, if you could shed some light on that.
Well, I think for the most part, I would, the only way I would disagree with you, I think he generally has gotten the respect for what he did on the court. and been appreciated. Maybe people aren't saying enough how great he is, because if you have a conversation about the greatest player in history, in NBA history, I think there's probably a lot of people out there that leave him out of the top five, which is a mistake. But for the most part, I think people know he was great in high school, great in college, great in the pros. If you take all three levels, you could easily make the case that he's the greatest basketball player ever. But it's the personality. He's got bad people skills then and now. The thing that you just noted about why people should respect him, when you talked about, what was it when you said his stand on civil rights, and there was one other one?
Just I think he's whenever there's like a major social issue, he's always out on kind of major television networks, not afraid to express his opinions about just different things that are going on.
And now imagine it's 1967, 1968, 1969 in America.
Sure.
And he's trying to take those same stands, and he's talking about how Black people have not been treated well in America, and I'm not going to the Olympics. And he stood up for Muhammad Ali, which is a sign of his conviction, a sign of his intelligence. We could sit here now in 2024 and talk about all the positives, and that how that's such a positive reflection on young Lew Alcindor. But in the moment, Muhammad Ali was very unpopular in America. When we talk about polarizing, Muhammad Ali in the late 1960s was the definition of polarizing. So part of it was that he was taking stands that were unpopular in the time. Part of it was that he was a Black man who didn't want to just go along to get along. And that's what America in the late 60s wanted more of from some people. Obviously not everybody, but let's face it, it was not an easy time to be outspoken and saying, I'm a Black man in America and I'm not being treated well. That brought on a lot. And combine that with the fact that he was not good with the media. He was very much of an introvert. As I mentioned before, he hated the attention. He did not do well with it. When he had to do it, he was terrific. He was very mature for a young age, very smart. He handled his high school press conference to announce UCLA as his college choice. He handled that very well. Anytime he had to stand up before a group when he was in college, he did very well. He just didn't like it. He was an introvert. He's not somebody who wants the media around, and often didn't hide it. And so he just doesn't do well all the time around people. That's still the case. And it was especially the case back then, when there was also this, he wasn't nearly as beloved back then as he is now. That's the important thing to keep in mind, that the 2020s, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar was in a much different time than the 1960s Lew Alcindor.
No, that makes sense. One last question before we let you go. What surprised you just when making this book? Did anything like stand out to you when through your research compared to when you first entered this kind of the pre-writing phase?
I think there was a lot of things. I'll give a quick mention to J.D. Morgan, the athletic director, get some time in this book. But we knew that he was a big factor in UCLA success. They named the athletic department building on campus after him, but probably more of a factor than anybody now realizes. There's a few other things as well, but if I had to pick one, I went into this with the idea that it wasn't just UCLA in the Times. It was UCLA as part of the Times, that they had a connection to the White House, because H.R. Haldeman was Richard Nixon's chief of staff. He was a UCLA guy, and he was the chief fundraiser for Pauley Pavilion, which obviously became a huge factor. We knew that Lew Alcindor, and again, I use that name because in college he had not changed yet to Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. We knew that he was a voice in the civil rights movement, but he was connected much closer to Muhammad Ali and trying to become out more outspoken than I think most people realize. So I think the most surprising thing is what I thought was a connection is actually a close tie. John Wooden and H.R. Haldeman, the chief of staff, became friends for the rest of their life. In fact, when Haldeman went to prison for Watergate, John Wooden went and visited him. That's how long they remained friends. I talked to some of the people who organized the Cleveland Summit, which was the big moment in 1968, I believe. I think it was 1968, when Muhammad Ali's people, when his supporters went to Jim Brown, who had retired as the Cleveland Browns running back, and said, "Can you get some people together and talk to Muhammad about his decision to remain a conscientious objector and not go into the service and not potentially face the draft?" And so when they went to that, they said, "You know, get some people together." Lew Alcindor was one of the first people they called. I had one of the organizers say that it was clear to the people who spent time with Jim Brown, Muhammad Ali, Bill Russell was also there. Muhammad Ali didn't just know this college sophomore from UCLA. The quote I was given was, Muhammad Ali loved Lew Alcindor, loved Kareem Abdul-Jabbar. So it was a much closer connection. UCLA being part of the Times as they're winning championships and Bill Walton is doing his campus protests and John Wooden is on the other side because he's a Nixon guy. Again, Alcindor and the civil rights movement. All of these connections went much deeper than I expected. It wasn't just sort of a casual thing. It was real. And I think that makes the story that much more fascinating.
Scott, this has been a great chat. Thank you very much for joining us. Can you please let our audience know where they can find you on social media? Again, where they can find the book and any other projects or anything we should be watching out for you in 2024?
Well, the book is going to be available in most major bookstores and hopefully some of the smaller independent bookstores as well. I'd love to see some opportunities at the independent bookstores around the country. And obviously online as well at the major online sellers. It should be readily available. I hope people really enjoy it. As I said, it's a little bit different. It's not a typical sports book, and that's exactly what I was going for. Still plenty of basketball in there, but more about the people and the moments. And it's not a strategy breaking down games kind of book. Love to continue the conversation if anybody wants to. I'm on X at S Howard Cooper. And also the same on Instagram and on Facebook at Scott Howard Cooper.
Fantastic. Thanks, Scott, again for joining us. Much appreciated.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Hoopsology, presented by Vaz Life. If you have comments or questions about this episode, please email hoopsologypod@gmail.com. Also, leave us a review on iTunes and follow us on all social media platforms.